course not. But we're the image of the gods, aren't we? So obviously they think like us. That must mean they're pricks like us too. Who wants to wait 50 years when you can snap your fingers and poof, you've got an army of the dead? For that matter, Blaze said, tapping Dante's chest as he built up steam, if they're so high and mighty, how are we supposed to guess what they're thinking? We're probably like ants to them. Can ants understand that we're thinking? That's different.
How is it any different at all?
It just is. Dante shrugged. He groped around for his place. So whatever Aron was, nobody else liked him anymore. What with the dangerous belief you're standing in this brief wick doesn't mean hell all to the one that comes after, and once things got so crazy in Colin, the counter-army practically conscripted itself. They smithied up a few thousand pikes for the rabble and promised the land to the nobles, and off they went. Needless to say, all the heretics in Colin were killed. That only stirred up the ones everywhere else all the worse. But to make a long story slightly less long, they were all killed, too. The traditionalist armies burnt their temples and their books, beheaded the priests who renounced and quartered the ones who didn't. That's where the Fellgate came from. Blaze dropped his jaw.
What? Those little black knobs are their heads?
Yeah. Dante laughed. Look like old apples, don't they?
And they get to spend the rest of their years watching the asses of horses ponce down the street.
And the thing is, they were wrong. They lied about Aron, and when his followers objected, some of them were killed. And then, when they tried to fight back, all of them were killed. It's like people care more about preserving their power than serving the truth.
Blaze bobbed his head. The powers that be wouldn't be the powers that be if they didn't.
Yeah. Dante grinned a moment, then realized just what he was grinning at and made his face go serious. I took the book from one of the ruined temples of Aron.
Ah, Blaze said, nodding sagely. The kind of crime where it's a race to see who can hang you first.
The best kind. You'd better hurry up and become an invincible wizard, then.
I don't know how.
Dante flushed. I wish I'd had more time in Bressel before they found me.
And I wish I had a princess in her skivvies.
In fact, forget the skivvies.
Blaze chuffed at himself, then looked down. Actually, I want to see some damn food, then eat it. What have you got?
He reached again for the pack. Let's catch some fish, before it gets too dark.
Great idea, he said,
standing and contemplating the pond. Where's the hooks? Dante got to his feet. Can't you sort of stab them?
Yeah.
Blaze whipped out his sword, and the metal rang in the quiet. He brandished it at the banks.
Come on, you cowardly fish! Come up on dry land and fight like a man!
He slashed the waters, sending droplets hissing.
I missed. Well, maybe if you actually tried. I thought you were nature boy, Blaze said, flipping water at him with the weapon's point.
Dante shrank back.
Can't you whittle up some bones or something, lure them out with the song of the sea?
If I catch any, you can't eat them, Dante said, unsheathing his own sword. He trailed the bank, eyes on the lurking shadows.
A challenge!
He heard mud slurping and jumped when the rock Blaze had thrown catapulted into the pond. He spat water from his face.
You ass!
He brushed uselessly at his soaked doublet.
I'll catch twice your stupid fish, Blaze said.
He turned on his heel and stalked the opposite way. Dante hurried to a tall stand of reed some 30 feet down. Within moments, his eyes set on a trout hovering in the shallows. He lunged at it with his sword and fell to his knees in the water. He splashed back ashore, checking to see if Blaze had seen. But the kid was occupied with his own prey. He scared away a second fish, then a third, before he moved further along the shores. And it wasn't until it was so dark he was beginning to see fish where they weren't there that he drew back his sword after a strike and found a trout speared on its tip. I hope you enjoy your carrots, he said a few minutes later when he found Blaze at the far point of the pond.
Screw your carrots, Blaze said, displaying his sword over a stomped-down basket of grass.
In the gloom, he saw the silver bodies of three cleaned fish. A wind riffled the waters, stirred the dry leaves of the trees against each other. They retreated into the woods, where a fire wouldn't be seen from the clearing at the pond, and bit into the crackle-skinned fish while they were still so hot they burned their mouths. For days they stayed at the pond, content to fish with branch-cut spears in the morning and the evening, scrubbing around for plants in the woods when the noon sun drove the trout into deeper waters, sometimes swimming, sometimes crushing around the undergrowth until their trousers were thick with burrs, running around for the simple sake of running around. Most days, Blaze went off for an hour or more in his own explorations while Dante plunged into the cycle. Without references and histories and his own footnotes, he feared he couldn't grasp more than the surface of what he read. But the further he pressed, the more he understood. His progress was slow as ever. He was often forced to flip back to earlier sections, interrupted by the frequent need to forage for things to fill a stomach that seemed to empty every couple of hours of the book. But he was building toward a new peak. He could feel it in the hollows of his bones. When Blaze got back from his solo trips, Dante shut the book and came at the boy with sword in hand. He learned the delicate mechanics of the parry and riposte, to watch the hips of his opponent, to know where he was going, to use his footwork to create the balance that would be the difference in who died on whose blade. Dante didn't know much, but he could tell Blaze was better than he should be at 15 and a half. He had a natural grace, a quickness to his wrists that never let his blade stray too far to leave him open. Compared to that, Dante's relative clumsiness with the sticks they used for their full-contact duels was a constant frustration that filled him with a shame he hadn't felt since the night at the temple. He'd carried that feeling for as long as he could remember, that solitude, that sense that whatever he did was being judged by things he couldn't see. Before he'd met Blaze, he would have given up swordplay the moment he realized he wasn't any good at it. He was aware of his foolishness now, that Blaze had to hold back to keep from disarming him the moment they began, but he sparred on until his arms were so noodly he could hardly lift them above his shoulders. The memory of the temple began to fade, lurking beyond the edges of his sight.
"Not great," Blaze said, bending over to plant his hands on his knees after one of their sessions. "But maybe you'll keep them from killing you long enough for me to run away."
"Not fair. That's what I hired you for." Dante went to bed exhausted, rose with the dawn, and read through the pink filter of sunlight. The days were mild. The frost stayed gone for a week, then reappeared in their sleep without warning, waking Dante a half dozen times. Each time he woke, he pulled his knees tighter to his chest, or added another tent of branches to the fire. He got up for a good half hour before dawn, cold and tired and sore, and he watched the flames blacken the thin kindling they cut each day, the odd hunks of wood they sometimes found sunk in the dirt, the wet fibers of which crackled like crumpling paper and spat smoldering knots of embers their way. All the wood would be too wet before long. A pre-morning breeze kicked up, bearing the smells of damp leaves and the stark cut of cold. The snows could come at any time. They'd be early if they showed today, and he thought the air would stay warm enough when it was mixed with sunlight and hard work. But it was there, biding behind the mountains, marching from the north. He'd spent time in the wilds around the village before, but mainly in the summer, and when he tried to think about where they'd go when the snows came, his mind turned its face from his worries. Years later, when Blaze was gone, and so was his youth, he'd looked to this time as a beacon, the single span of his life after the warm haze of childhood that he could remember without the twin shadows of doubt and regret. These couple weeks in the woods would hold the weight of entire seasons of the years before and after. When he thought of these days, allowing himself the memory, like an old dog getting up to bark at a fox he'd once chased, he thought of the yellow touch of sunlight through the trees, tasted the sweet, clean flesh of lake trout caught that day, heard the twitter of blackbirds, and the laughter of two boys, saw Blazer's sword flashing before it crashed against his own. A snake in every garden, the death of every pet, a day when one wakes to find his parents are gone, the bitter tale to those memories, all those years later, after the grey passage of decades, after everything had changed. There would have been a way to make things different, if he'd known enough to make them run to far-off lands, and so avoid the treason and bloodshed and heartache to come. But then that would come at the cost of the man he'd become. He'd close the memories, like a book. An irrelevant story from a place that no longer existed. There was no room for looking back on what couldn't be undone. When they saw what he'd done, they clapped Jack Hand, as he came to be known, in 30 pounds of chains, and locked him in the lowest level of the oubliette, where he was to be kept until his eldest brother's hourglass ran dry, which was said to be fed by the sands of the endless Mandal Desert. He lived in darkness, fed once a day, nipped by lice and by rats. Before enacting his imprisonment, they took the index finger from each hand, one finger for each of his brother's wives. There had been cause for more drastic justice, but royal blood was royal blood, which was more than could be said for the wives of his brothers, and not lightly spilled. Dante looked up and wondered whether it were all right to laugh at history, and more specifically a history of the killing of women. The cycle had taken a strange turn, abandoning the lumbering attempts to explain the skies and the encyclopedic catalogue of names and kings for digressive stories. Not that he'd read many of the second classical authors that had prospered in Gask centuries before, but that's what its tone reminded him of. It read with a certain ironic distance, not so stiflingly self-serious as the recent works he'd absorbed back in Bressel. He hadn't known books could be written in anything but the artless blunder of the holy books, the juvenile wit of romances and adventures, or the over-elaborate posing of poetry and history, these last of which frustrated him most of all, seemingly written more with the intent of intimidating whoever opened them than to say anything. And he read on, with half a smile, and the small but sharp fear this new tone was an aberration, something that would disappear as soon as the story was over. Jack Han's cell was as dark as the caves under the earth. They'd intended it as punishment. He recalled the things he'd learned, dwelled on the last few hours with the bodies. He hailed the shadows to slay the rats and plague the lice, and sooner than later they no longer swarmed his cell. After a while, he likely went mad, though the lack of observers and Jack Hand's own questionable temperament rendered the status of his mind a matter of philosophy rather than fact. Who knows how we'd act, locked away, locked alone? The mind is a vast place, and its hunger's far sharper than the body's. The mind is a vast place, and the black of his world was vaster. He drew that darkness, shaped it, and when, 3 years later, they opened his cell because the growing stink, reportedly legendary even by the spongy standards of dungeons, could mean little other than its occupant had died and was rapidly being converted to the kind of brown sludge kept only at bay by the continual intake of breath, his captors were met by a chattering horde of rats.
skinless, fleshless, bloodless, the creeping bones of 72 life-sucked rodents flooding from each of 30 different cracks in the walls, forming into two streams of surging beasts that overwhelmed the guards as saplings before a tsunami. It's been wondered how so great a force could be stowed in all the space of his constricting cell. But what is not under debate is how they maimed and murdered every living occupant of the keep. There they ceased, and Jack Hand took his throne. The bodies fed his armies, and he, in turn, was fed by that shadow that lurks behind all things. Blaze was off trampling grass, but for now Dante marked his page. He'd kept a smile till the final sentence, when at once he knew, in the same way he knew if he jumped, he'd come back down, that if he stared hard enough and right enough at the deep morning shadows cast on his knees by the leaves, something would happen. Before the blushing hand of stupidity could grab him by the neck, he blanked his mind and settled his hands in his lap. He felt a pressure, a tangible presence, like water were being squirted into the front of his skull. Somehow it didn't hurt. It felt wrong, but not so wrong to tempt him to stop. Sweat welled from his temples. A hand span of the nearest shadows stirred as if by the wind. The illusion was so real, he didn't register shock until another part of his mind told him his hair wasn't moving, and he didn't feel colder like he would if air were moving over his sweat-slick skin. He raised a hand, and he had the queasy sensation of going blind as the dark substance swelled, casting him into a darkness as deep as the space between the constellations. His breath came hard, but he stood slowly, not wanting to spook it, for as little sense as that made. He still felt nothing against his skin, not like if he were wading through something solid. He took a trial step. It wasn't a disaster. He took another and tripped on a root. Pain shot through his palms and knees when they pounded ground and the delumination weakened, till it was more like a grey fog than like he had no eyes. Dante saw the condensed shadow was roughly spherical, highest a few feet behind him. It had stayed put when he started moving. He emptied his mind, and the darkness ate up the light. After 5 paces in a straight line, the world winked on again. When he looked down, he saw his body rising from the mass of shadows at an angle across his waist. Centaurian, as if his dad had mated with a globby black hemisphere. He wouldn't put it past him.
"Hey, Dante!"
Blaze's voice reached him in a hissed shout.
"I'm here!"
he called back, matching the boy's volume, and when he looked down, the shadowsphere was gone. He picked up the book and walked toward where he'd heard Blaze cry.
"What were you doing?"
Blaze peered past him into the trees.
"Reading."
"Not riding horses?"
"Not recently," Dante said, eyeing him.
"Then someone else is here. There were tracks down at the pond."
"Travelers?"
Blaze quirked his mouth.
"We're miles from any road.
Maybe it's someone's land. They're out for a bit of fishing. And maybe you're about to get an arrow through your neck." Blaze rubbed his mouth, then his eyes.
"We've got to go."
"All right," Dante said, spooked by the boy's seriousness. They headed for the camp. A stone's throw from it, Blaze barred an arm across his chest and pressed him down into the bushes.
"What is it?"
he whispered. "Maybe nothing, but if it's a damn trap, I don't want to walk right into it." The grounds looked empty. Their fire had gone out during the night, and any smoke was hours gone. The stillness of the wood pressed on his ears, like he'd dived underwater. Blackbirds chirped at each other. He heard the furtive rustle of small animals tracking through the fallen leaves. A crow cackled, and he jerked his arms to his body. A sour tightness took his chest. He'd come to think of themselves as the only two in this place.
We'll circle around, Blaze whispered. If it looks clear, we'll grab our stuff. If you see or hear anything, freeze on the spot.
Dante nodded, glad to follow Blaze's steps. The kid hunched down and advanced around their camp, pausing every 20 or 30 feet to cock his head to the silence. When they'd made more than half a circle around it, he hunkered down for a minute, lips a white line. Dante culled small effort in the fact horses were noisy by nature, always snorting and whickering at each other like big, hairy idiots. They couldn't take 2 steps in the dense forest without sounding like someone falling down a mountain. Blaze tapped him on the shoulder, and they stole straight for their gear. He saw no sign the ground here had been disturbed by anyone but themselves. They gathered weapons and vegetables, wordless, wrapping the 2 half-eaten fish from the night before in fresh-fallen leaves. Dante grabbed a stray book, and that was all it took to be ready to move. They drew back, Blaze leading them direct away from the pond, sitting a 10th mile to the east. They moved quickly but without panic, feet crumpling leaves but not crashing them. Still, Blaze would halt them every couple minutes to crouch beside a trunk and listen to the forest. It was early morning yet, the sun bright without being warm. The season had begun to shorten its track through the sky, but it would be light another 8 hours, maybe 9, and the thought of going on like this for hours on end made Dante want to lie down then and there.
"There's no way they tracked us from Bressel," Blaze said at one of their halts. "They'd have been on us in 2 days, not 2 weeks."
"We don't know it was them," Dante said, looking behind them.
"No one else has any reason to be out here."
"Other people exist, you know. Don't be a fool." Blaze's voice had jumped, and he bugged his eyes and brought it back to a whisper.
"It could be fox hunters. It could be vagabonds, though that would raise the interesting question of how the hell they got their hands on horses. Even if they were those things, it wouldn't make us any safer. There's no law here."
"Just us," Dante said, clenching his teeth. "How does anyone get anywhere when everything's this screwed up?"
"By being so nasty, mere sight of them makes everyone else run away. Let's go."
Despite living in the woods for weeks, he hadn't truly noticed how many animals shared the land. Every crunch of leaves or sudden shrill cry made his neck go tight. The air was cool, almost cold, but he was tickled by icy lines of sweat down his ribs. Blaze walked with his back bent, leaning forward and hurrying along like his nose weighed 200 pounds, and only constant motion could keep him from toppling. Dante urged the sun on, outraged that something so big could be so slow. Hours passed. His feet got sore, but he found he wasn't tired, not after the last few weeks of fake sword fights and stomping around the pathless woods. The back of his mouth tasted like the dry, sour aftertaste of cranberries. His head felt thick, fuzzy, and no more substantial than puffwood seeds, and when he took his eyes off the ground and held his hand in front of his face, he saw that it was shaking. Noon. The sun came straight down and lay against his skin without warmth. He kept his eyes on the beat of his feet. There was no wind, and when he saw the ripple of the shadows of the leaves, his foot almost missed the earth. With a few more days of reading and concentration, he thought he would be able to do more with them than see them. He hadn't had those days, though. All he could depend on, if things fell apart, was his blade and his training. He trusted the steel, at least. He nudged Blaze toward the subdued trickle of a stream, and they knelt at its edge and drank away the sweat of the journey. He shrugged his pack from one shoulder, meaning to eat some carrots, then froze and listened to the language of the woods.
"Get back," he whispered. "What is it?"
Blaze's hand went to his sword. Dante shook his head and retreated along the route they'd taken, breaking after 30 feet to head away from the stream. He pulled Blaze down under a thick bush and closed his eyes, trying to hush his breath. Blaze made as if to speak, and stopped at the snap of twigs from the direction they'd just left. He pressed himself lower to the dirt.
"They crossed the stream,"
they heard, a harsh, deep voice that rumbled through the air. Dante raised his head a couple inches, but the trees were too thick to see anything but branches.
"What have you got?"
"Not far off. I can feel them."
The second voice was high, but faint. Dante heard more words, but couldn't differentiate them. Then,
"It's too close to tell."
"Let's take a damn break," said a third man. "Haven't eaten since sunup." "We can catch them now," the first one said. "They're close."
"We can catch them just as easy without starving to death in the meantime. They're on foot."
The discussion dropped to a mutter of details. He strained his ears, made out the words trail and book and carry the bodies. They went silent a minute later, and after another minute, Blaze caught Dante's eye and gestured north, away. Dante raised a finger to his own mouth. A few seconds later, a hoarse blue air passed its mouth. He thought he could smell its animal sweat over the gaminess of his own. Hooves splashed through the stream a few minutes later. Dante waited, eyes closed and mind wide, but he felt nothing. With a prickle to his neck, he realized he was disappointed.
"We should head back," he whispered, "toward the river."
"Could be others searching that way."
"I don't think so. We can cut northeast, find a town."
"What good will a town do us?" Blaze said. "Keep us from getting killed in the woods like dogs."
"Come on."
He got to his feet with exaggerated care, arms held to either side. He didn't know how long the stream would delay the riders, and he led the way this time, setting a pace so fast his trailing foot sometimes left the ground before his first had fallen. The leaves clicked together in the afternoon breeze, and he couldn't keep himself from hastening to a jog. They covered 3 or 4 miles before his wind gave out, and they dragged themselves beneath another umbrella of undergrowth. Not for the first time, he wished one of his books had a close-scale map of the land around them. He knew there would be people around the river. That's what rivers were for. But they could easily cut 10 miles of north-south travel if they only knew where they were. He needed his back where the pack had bounced against it.
"They were following us,"
Blaze said. His voice was above a whisper, but still soft enough not to carry.
"No kidding."
Dante put his knees to his chest and rested his head against them.
"I mean, they were trailing us. Like hounds. The one who sounded like a fairy said he could sense us."
"He can.
How's that even possible?"
"Don't ask me."
"Come on," Blaze said, poking him in the side. "You study these things."
"The key word is study," Dante said, narrowing his eyes. "I don't know how to do anything."
"This is hopeless. If they can pick up a trail that's weeks old, they can follow us to the ends of the earth."
"No, they can't. They lost us for a few weeks there. We can walk on rocks instead of dirt. Whenever we find a stream, we'll wade down it a ways rather than cut straight across."
"That'll just slow us down."
"It'll slow their woodsmen even more." Dante got to his knees, readied himself to stand.
"I don't think the one who said he can sense us can tell any more than that we're near.
If he could, we'd already be dead."
"But we can't hide when they've got him and a tracker,"
Blaze said, wrapping his fingers around the hilt of his sword.
"That leaves running and fighting. I'm getting sick of my legs having all the say. My arms are getting restless. They're asking, when do I get to do my part?"
"Tell your arms to stow it."
"We can ambush them, like in the alley."
"No," Dante said, then felt foolish at his own authority. "We're not prepared.
These ones are more dangerous than the others."
"This is cowardly," Blaze said, but he stood. Dante's face went hot. "Better yellow than red." Branches lashed their faces. Mud sucked at their boots. Roots reached up with gnarled fingers scrabbling for their toes. Their feet were stubbed and sore and sweaty. Their packs chafed their shoulders. Dante did all he could to make his passage look weird, walking on just his toes for 100 yards, until his calves gave out, striding longer with one leg than the other. Sometimes, when Blaze was ahead and distracted with making the trail, he'd hop on 1 foot for 8 or 10 bounces before he was afraid Blaze could hear the odd rhythm and look back. He had no idea whether it would help. He doubted it would do more than make the hunter laugh. What else could he do? Turn their blood to fire inside their veins? Conjure a demon to drag them down to hell? Maybe he could just make the entire world blow up while he was at it. He trudged on. A few miles further, another stream blocked their way, and they waded till the water sluiced by just under the tops of their boots. They followed it upstream a couple 100 yards until it bent back toward the west, then clambered up the bank. Dante's feet felt like stones. They couldn't do another crossing, he thought. Their boots wouldn't dry before dark. Their time in the woods had taught them to walk with minimal noise, and they halted together when they heard the slow but steady steps among the leaves. Something heavy, many-legged. They ducked behind an ivy-wrapped stone and listened to the steps grow nearer. When he saw the branches approaching, Dante thought, for one crazy moment, the trees had taken life and were walking around on their roots. And then the tan sweep of the buck's head cleared the brush, and he ached for a bow. But they'd have no time to clean it, no strength to carry all that meat, and they let out their breath and hurried on.
They continued through the afternoon, rested in the twilight, then walked a couple hours in the weak moonlight, guided by the bright northern wink of Joros, which he'd come to think of as the Mill Star. Just as he thought his legs would give out beneath him, Blaze stopped short, squatting down and planting his hands on his knees.
"That's all I've got in me. One more step and I'm going to fall on my face."
"We've made good time," Dante said, plopping down beside him. "Should find a town tomorrow."
"How far off from the river?"
15 miles. 20.
"I've never been this far north."
"Me neither." Blaze laughed for the first time that day.
"I'd never left Bressel."
"You never saw the sea?" Dante said, tucking his cloak around him.
"Well, yeah. Never any further than that, though."
They thought their private thoughts. Dante's heart thudded when Blaze reached for the pack, but he emerged with the leaf-wrapped fish and a handful of withering mushrooms. He passed Dante one of the fish.
"May as well eat these. Won't need to save anything if we'll hit town tomorrow."
"Yeah." They ate their largest meal in days and sipped from the water skins. Exhaustion hit him before he was full. He could feel the puffiness in his eyelids, the discontent in his muscles that would mean full-fledged aches in the morning. Without speaking, they both knew the insanity of lighting a fire, and instead poured leaves over their legs and torsos to hide and to insulate.
"It's the book," Blaze said, and Dante realized he'd been asleep.
"Huh?"
"They're following the book."
Dante opened his eyes. He reached into the folds of his cloak, felt the leathery cover of the book where he kept it wrapped beside his face.
"Leave it, if you like," he said around the lump in his throat.
"I won't." Blaze didn't respond. Dante lifted his head to see if the boy had been talking in his sleep.
"I don't run from my problems," Blaze said at last.
"Well, not if I can help it."
"We'll outrun them to town.
When they get there, they won't find us. We'll find them."
"That's a different tune than you were singing earlier," the boy said. "I can't tell if that's the kind of optimism that's like to take them by surprise, or the kind that gets us killed."
"If you die," Dante said, closing his eyes, "what's it matter anyway?"
I assume it'll hurt, Blaze said. Dante didn't know whether to laugh or curse or learn to pray. How had it all ended so suddenly? How did this violence keep finding him? If the Nether drove them to it, and if the Nether lurked behind all things, where in the wide realms of man could he go where it couldn't follow?
Chapter 4.
He woke up. That was a good thing. It meant he hadn't been killed in his sleep. He stood and wished he had. Leaves fell from the folds of his cloak, rustling like distant water, and Blaze stirred. Dante's calves and lower back felt like someone had been tugging on both ends of them all night. He stretched out, gingerly, closing his eyes. After the initial shock, and as long as he didn't move, the ache was almost pleasant. The sun hadn't yet lumbered over the fields of the east, but the stars on that side of the sky were growing faint in the deep blue. Through a gap in the trees, the six stars of Thames Hourglass were just above the horizon. Autumn was slipping away. He sat back down, shivering a bit, giving Blaze a little longer before they picked up where they'd left off. The world was shadow. In the moment of that thought, his senses seemed to fade. The hesitant pre-dawn birdsong became muffled. The fuzzy shapes of the last of the night grew darker, less distinct. His own breath galed in his ears. He reached out for those shadows, extending both his hand and his mind. They didn't come, and somehow he knew that was right. He tried again, slitting his eyes until he saw more eyelash than forest, counting the seconds between his deep and steady inhalations. Somehow he expected the slivers of darkness to be cold, but the only way he knew they were sinking into his skin was through sight, and a dull, far-off feel for its travel, the way you can finally see the sun move when it hits the horizon, or how the moon and fixed stars seem to have jumped whenever you look to the skies of the night. The pain faded from his limbs then. A bright red bramble scratch on his left hand went pink, and then to the rusty brown of an old scab. He picked it away with his thumbnail, and beneath it the skin was fresh. He closed his eyes and thought if the opposite desire of his mind would cause the opposite change to his flesh.
"What time is it?" Blaze asked, rousing him.
The Nether, naming it for what it was, shuddered back into normal shadow.
"Just before dawn.
Time for unreasonable men to be on their way," Blaze muttered.
They packed up and lit out. Leaves spun to the forest floor. Dante let Blaze lead. He wouldn't know how fast to travel if his legs still burned like they had when he'd woken. Birds chirruped in the treetops like nothing were different. He walked with a stillness of thought, feeling light, feeling holy, the calm in the center of the storm of all this life. He'd stopped pretending like he didn't understand what was happening to him. He'd imagined it would take longer, in fact, that he'd need a teacher or a guide, that he'd need to meditate or pray to be handed the way. He didn't know how the book was showing him the way, only that it was. Dante watched the back of Blaze's head bob as he stepped over fallen branches or ducked under live ones. He'd learn faster if he didn't have to watch himself, to keep what he was learning hidden. He needed practice, but couldn't get it when proof of his ability would turn the boy to silence and sidelong glances when he thought Dante wasn't looking. Blaze had become something like a friend since the days in the woods had shown him Dante was nothing but an average kid. He didn't want to lose that. He'd had friends before, but not many, and he'd left them all behind the day he'd left the village. He missed them. In an abstract way, knowing they were gone to him, and he would never see them again. He began to forget himself, little tricks as he walked, concentrating on the shadows until they curled around his finger, putting a dark globe on the toe of his boot, and seeing how long he could make it keep up with his steps. Thinking on the men he'd read about in the cycle, and the thrill they must have felt when they reached out with their hand and made the world change. They were no longer so unimaginable, so distant and alien. Stathis the Wise, and Linnigan, Jack Hand, and Kerry Cooper. He wished he could meet them, and hear their words for himself. "Stream up ahead," Blaze murmured, and Dante jumped. "Okay. It should turn into a river." "That's what streams do, become rivers," Dante said, tucking his chin against his chest and peering into the crossed boughs of the trees to the east, as if looking hard enough would summon up the grey waters of the Chancet. "We could follow it, I mean," he said, shrugging off Dante's tone. "That's an idea. Can't follow our tracks if there aren't any. Let's cross it. Head upstream a bit, and double back." A couple hundred yards on the other side, they turned around, retracing their path as closely as they could. The stream was shallow, fast, and strong, widening abruptly from 10 feet across to 20 or 30 of ankle-deep flow, then constricting again, just as quickly, at the next elbow in its path. Its banks were dug deep. If they ducked, they couldn't be seen unless someone were watching right from the lip. And its bed was a carpet of rocks, as smooth as if they'd been sanded, some as small as robin's eggs, others sturdy and immobile as the heads of bulls. Big floods in the spring carved it deep, no doubt. They walked on dry rocks at its edge for a while, throwing out their arms for balance, stones thocking together under their weight. The rush of water washed away the sounds of the woods, and they spoke, when at all, in raised tones that would have carried like seeds on a breeze if they'd been above the banks. At the bends in its path, the banks narrowed on them until the stony beds were buried in cold water that yanked at their ankles with the strength of a man. They slowed at these times, keeping a hand on the wall of dirt to their right, or the shoulder of whoever was leading the way. "This is not a civilized way to live," Blaze said, after the third or fourth such passage, raising one soggy boot while he balanced himself against the slope of the bank. The waters were getting deeper, reaching their knees when they took a wrong step. "Want some food?" Dante said. His feet had begun to ache again. He wiggled his toes, fighting back the numbness. The water felt like it came from close snows. "I want a fire!" Blaze stomped his feet, squirting water over the pale grey rocks, darkening them with dampness. "And I want a pony that breathes fire and craps strawberries." "You'd probably eat them," Blaze said. He sat down and let out a long breath.
"You wouldn't?"
"Out of a pony's ass?"
Blaze hawked and spat into the swirling current.
"I don't even want to know where you think the cream would come from."
Dante shrugged.
"More for me, then."
He found a few mushrooms wrapped up in his pack, squashed by the books as they'd shifted on the walk, moist and drooping in their own fluids. He handed Blaze the bigger share, and the boy set them on his lap and stared at them for a moment.
"This is what I mean."
Blaze popped one in his mouth. Chewed, paused, then swallowed. He dipped a hand in the water and drank.
"This is how animals live."
"It's just for a few days, you baby."
"You're the baby."
"Why am I the baby?"
"Because you're always scared like one. No one's going to save us. We've got to deal with this ourselves."
Blaze ate slowly, chewing each off-white cap for a long time. Dante had to still his arm to keep from punching him. He blinked, looked away. This whining. "I'm starting to learn," he said when he could trust his voice.
"Good. I'm tired of running this show by myself."
"Not that."
Dante pulled his lips from his teeth and put his hand on Blaze's wrist.
The boy met his eyes,
then looked down, saw the grey trailing from Dante's fingers like wisps of smoke. "What are you doing?" He called to it, brought the dark places under the rocks like he'd brought the black images of the leaves that morning. He felt a click in his chest, like something there had turned on its side, but he kept the summons, his mind an empty tunnel.
"Stop it!"
"Shut up." The words didn't break his command. Then it was done, and he sucked air and freed his hand, shaking it. The tips of his fingers felt as cold as his waterlogged feet.
"What did you do?"
Blaze said, sharp as his weapon.
"Stand up. Walk around."
"Go to hell," he said. Then got to his feet and bounced in place. He walked a circle around Dante, and Dante saw the knots fade from his face.
"I'm not tired."
"Neither am I," Dante said, sticking out his jaw. He let the silence linger, let Blaze think his thoughts.
"Can you do anything else?"
Blaze said, gazing into the woods. "Not really. Not yet." Blaze folded his arms. "No, it's not right."
"Why?"
"Because you can't hold it in your hand." Dante picked up a rock and chucked it into the stream. Its splash was too soft to hear over the ceaseless whirl of the water.
"It's like you just woke up, isn't it? Like you haven't been walking at all."
Blaze rubbed the faint blonde hair on his upper lip.
"My dad used to say if you could build your life around nothing more than swinging a sword, you'll start to think all things come down to who can swing it better."
"And he's dead," Dante thought.
"You're a swordsman," he said instead. "That's not the point."
"I'm being careful," he said. "I'm not about to mess with things I don't understand."
"It's not enough to save us,"
Blaze said, dropping his eyes.
"It's just a start."
He tightened the drawstring on his bag, jerking the knot so they wouldn't slip. He got his feet under him and walked on down the streambed. Blaze kicked pebbles behind him. The only trees that could cling to the steep sides of the banks were small things, deep-rooted gnarls with close-clustered branches, and they walked in the full light of day. They hadn't seen sign of their pursuer since they'd heard their talk the day before. For all they knew, the three riders had headed west, lost their trail, and been turning in circles ever since. They were being chased by shadows. With a week to himself, with a month of study, Dante knew he could learn things to put a stop to all this. His eyes stung. Why didn't they just leave him alone? If the book was so special, why had they left it abandoned in a ruined temple? He slipped on a moss-coated stone, and Blaze grabbed his arm.
"Thanks,"
he said, brushing his sleeve where Blaze had touched him. The stream turned again, and the walls grew tight. Overhead, trees leaned over them, casting them into shadow. A gap no wider than an arm span separated the leaves on one side from those on the other. A blue and ragged line of sky so small he thought it could close completely if they faltered. He planted his feet in the water, each step deliberate as a chess move, thwarting the pull of the current. His legs were soaked past the knees. He walked on, eyes split between the treacherous stones under his feet and that thin blue band up above. One step, then another. Cold, but not tired. Alone, but leading his friend. It was hours before the banks leveled out and the trees pressed them to the water's edge. Dante had cleansed himself of his weariness again, but hadn't touched Blaze since. If he wanted to ache and struggle to lift his feet, that was his business. The stream doubled in width, and when he looked to its middle, Dante could no longer see the bottom. The voice of the waters moved from the thin nattering of gossips to a deeper, thoughtful hum. Sometimes he wondered where the speed of the stream had gone. Then he'd catch sight of a leafy branch on its surface, hurtling past them at twice their swiftest walk, and he'd remember clear waters didn't mean still waters. He didn't speak up, but it wasn't long before he thought he could smell it. That faint tang of fresh water, not so stagnant as the pond, less of the earthy musk of dead, wet plants, and more that of a moving body, the crisper scent of pebbles being ground into the mud, and dry dirt taking on water. A final elbow, and the forest disappeared in front of them, giving way to the flat, grey depths of the Chancet River, half a mile wide, if a foot. The same river Bressel straddled 80 or 100 miles downstream. There they rested long enough to catch their breath and wring out their stockings, which steamed on the broad rocks where the stream funneled into the river. They crunched down on the last of their carrots, tossing the limp green tails into the water. They felt the sun on their faces. "Which way?" Blaise said, jabbing between his teeth with a stiff sprig of grass.
"North? Put more distance between us and Bressel."
"Makes sense. 5 more minutes, eh?"
Dante nodded. He cupped his hands to the stream, made sure his water skin was full. He wriggled the feeling back into his wrinkled toes, drying them for the first time since they'd been following the waterway. It might be days before his boots dried.
"What's funny?" Blaise asked.
"I don't know why I bother," he said, nodding to the damp on the rocks where his feet had dripped.
"So moss doesn't grow between your toes," Blaise said with an air of authority.
"You can't grow moss on your feet," Dante said, a small string of carrot dislodged from his teeth, and he spat it out.
"I suppose you've soldiered in the fields where such things are common."
"You have."
"No," Blaise said, scratching his nose. "But my dad told me. Moss on your feet like the hair on the knuckles of grown men's toes."
"Moss only grows on things that don't move," Dante said, but he no longer knew if that were true. He'd passed plenty of days with wet feet, but couldn't remember any that hadn't ended around a fire.
"Be quiet."
"Like trees and—"
"Be quiet," Blaise commanded.
Dante glared at him and saw he was peering down the riverbank. It was a moment before the horseman moved into view, a couple hundred yards distant. Dante pressed himself against the rocks next to Blaise.
"Do you think he heard us?"
"No," Blaise murmured, then wiped his eyes. "Too much other noise. Do you see any others?"
"No. Could be in the woods."
"What's he doing?"
"Looking for sign," Dante said. "See how he zigzags, how slow it is."
"No wonder they haven't caught us," Blaise said, and then his smile went away. "Yet."
A minute went by. Another. The man kept to his search, looking up every 20 or 30 seconds to scan the area. The first time he did so, Dante pulled his head down so fast he barked his chin on the rock and almost cried out.
"What do you think?"
"I think," Dante breathed, "he's alone."
Blaise nodded.
"There's two of us."
"Think so."
"Better now than when the odds are back in their favor."
"I don't know."
Blaise touched the hilt of his sword. "We can get him if we sneak up on him."
"He's on horseback,"
Dante said, swallowing against the dryness of his throat.
"He'll ride away. Or ride out of range, then turn around and trample us."
"What if we went down a little closer, then ran out on the bank screaming and running away?"
"Like scared little kids," Dante said, giving him a look.
"Exactly like that," Blaise grinned.
"But we're not little kids."
"What do you bet he thinks we are? If you're strong, you're supposed to fake being weak. It's like the first rule of the field."
Dante said, wrapping his head around that. "He's still on horseback. He'll murder us."
"That's where you come in."
Blaze lifted himself a couple inches and started backing on elbows and hips into the protection of the trees. Dante did the same. When they could no longer see the rider, and the river showed in faint flashes behind the wall of reddening leaves, they got up and drew closer, placing their feet in the forest carpet like the first steps onto the uncertain ice of a pond. After what felt longer than an hour's march, Blaze put a hand on Dante's shoulder and snuck forward to where the trees thinned, peeking around a bole.
"Still there," he breathed when he got back. "Grab a couple rocks." "Rocks aren't going to make any difference." "Every little advantage," Blaze said,
then bit down hard to stop a laugh when he saw the look on Dante's face.
"You never know. Might get lucky."
"I bet." Dante rolled his eyes and scooped up two smooth stones, heavy for how well they fit in his palm. He followed Blaze toward the river.
"Insane," he thought. All this chasing had driven them insane.
Knowing this was the smart play did nothing to slow his charging heart, to dry the dampness under his arms.
"Ready?"
"I guess."
"Go,"
Blaze whispered, then ran out on the bank and began shrieking for his mother. Dante followed him, body tight with panic, when he saw the rider not 100 feet downstream. He heard him actually laugh, then ran harder at the thunder of hooves in the grass. Within moments, the rider had halved the distance between them. He whipped his sword from his back and crouched in the saddle, lining the two boys in his sights. Dante tripped, flailing his arms for balance, and his screams were real.
"Now!"
Blaze yelled, but the stumble had stolen Dante's focus on the nether. He reached out again, the edges of his mind roaring like the wind.
"Now, you son of a bitch!"
The rider raised his sword. Light flashed over Dante's eyes. He could see the sod leaping from the horse's strides. He stopped and turned, laughing in horror, and when he imagined he could feel the horse's hot breath, he flung out his hand, and the beast's head disappeared in a ball of blackness. A stone hurled past his shoulder, and the rider swiped at it as his mount locked its legs and skidded on the damp grass. One of its front legs buckled, and then it was down, sliding and rolling in the grass, the snap of its bones, and the suddenly scared curses of its rider as he leapt free and collapsed to the ground. The boys charged then. Dante threw both rocks with all his strength, missing the first and clipping the man's shoulder with the second. Blaze's blade bobbed beside him, and Dante tore loose his own, and they were on the downed man before he found his feet.
"You tricky shit!"
he screamed. He struck from his knees, a fierce blow Dante blocked, but which sent him staggering. The man's eyes were bright with some feral emotion when Blaze's counter cut off his left hand. He swung wildly, forcing the boy to fall back, then reeled to his feet. Dante stepped forward and swung his weapon with both hands. The man deflected it, but his motion threw off an already poor balance, and Blaze's stroke broke his ribs like the staves of a barrel. He fell to his knees, propping himself up with his bleeding stump. He opened his mouth and spit hung in strands. His elbow quivered, and he raised the point of his blade at the two boys. Dante's backhand strike knocked it from his hand. Blaze aimed a final blow at the soft stretch of his neck. It didn't fall cleanly, but when he pulled back his sword, the body dropped and didn't move. Blaze laughed, a hollow thing. Dante didn't join him. "The others can't be far," Blaze said. "We can hide his body." Dante slid his sword into its sheath. The man's wide wounds steamed in the chill air.
"Not the horse."
"Then we'll run," Dante said. He found a small coin purse and added it to his pocket. The horse was thrashing on the earth, legs shaking each time it tried to rise, and the bones wouldn't hold. Its great glassy eyes rolled in its skull. Dante looked to Blaze. "I can't," Blaze stated. "There's a bow," Dante said, pointing. "Take it. What if it kicks me?"
"It couldn't kick through a broken board," he said.
And when he went for more words, he found half-digested carrots instead. He leaned over and spat them into the grass.
He was looking for us to have gone south, Blaze said, turning away from Dante's gurgles. He shouldered the bow and a half-full quiver. There must be a town that way. Wetton, Dante said, the sour taste of his stomach on his tongue. He spat again. We can go faster on the bank.